This is When Orla Met, a conversation with and about some of the leading athletes, fascinating characters, and engaging brains in sport. Now, have you ever thought about what it means to be a woman in the public eye these days, specifically in sport? Well, chances are, if you're listening to this podcast, then you quite possibly have, since it's something that's come up before in my chats with the likes of Judy Murray and Dina Asher-Smith. Today's guest is someone who's had quite a bit to say on the matter. Sam Queck is an Olympic champion hockey player, something she achieved after two disappointing and frustrating Olympic Games, having not been picked for both Beijing and London. But despite the tenacity, determination, and hard graft it clearly took to succeed in what is a minority amateur sport, when her moment came, Sam found the media at least as ready to talk about her looks as anything she'd done on the hockey field. Why? Is that simply the lot of certain women in the public eye? Did she court that single dimension coverage by simply wanting to look good? And is it something that will ever change? Can women be both sexy and sporty and intelligent for that matter and all the variations in between? Or do we all, men and women, simply want our female role models to fit into a binary definition? Well, I wanted to chat about that and so much more. This is When Orla Met Sam Queck. So Sam, thank you for taking the time to chat to me out of your very, very busy schedule. What are you up to these days?
I'm a massive NFL fan, so I've just finished the three games at Wembley over there, sideline hosting and presenting. So that's a bit of a dream job. So when you're watching the game and you're a massive fan, but then also getting the opportunity to interview some of the, you know, game superstars and current players, I love that. And then hockey as well, I've been doing quite a bit in there. Work with Channel 5 for the Gallagher Premiership in their Super 5 games over Christmas and New Year. And then I'm off to India in a few weeks to cover the Men's Hockey World Cup.
And again for TV.
Yeah, all TV. Naturally fell into presenting, to be honest, after the Olympics. Just got so many opportunities, but at the same time, I was very conscious that when those opportunities were coming along, I had to completely grab them with two hands. Again, I'm not that deluded to say that the Olympic gold medal didn't open them doors. I mean, that's the reality of life. But as I say, whenever I went into a radio interview, a TV interview, I just made sure I knew who the guests were, what the chat was, so I could really just fulfill my potential when I was on there.
So where does hockey fit into all of that these days then?
Oh, well, to be honest, hockey's a funny one. So obviously we went and won the gold medal, which increased participation levels and interest huge after the Olympics. But as a sport as a whole, it's still an amateur sport. So I play for Bowden Hightown, who are based in Altrincham, and it's the most northern women's Premier League club above Birmingham, which obviously shows kind of everything is pretty much still down south. So that is the top league, one of the top teams in England, yet we only train for 2 hours on a Wednesday night and play on a Saturday, and it's all self-funded. Obviously the club help us out, but in terms of buying your new kit, travelling with your mates down to Canterbury all squeezed in a car, that's the reality of where hockey is at the moment.
And what about internationally then? Where are you with that?
I mean, I'm going to remember saying, I think I'm ready to retire, but I was never really ready to officially retire, if that makes sense. My head was always saying, you know, you missed out on Beijing, London, you finished on a gold at Rio. I just turned 30 3 weeks ago.
Congratulations.
Yes. Obviously got married in August.
Double congratulations.
So yeah, I'm just kind of moving slowly into the next part of my life, which I see, but my heart was always... Well, your body can still take it. You know, your head can still take it if you wanted to get fit and go. And there's always the odd comment. My husband still says, you know, you can still make Tokyo. But I'm enjoying so much of what I'm doing at the moment in terms of presenting and moving forward in that part of my career that I don't think I'd have the time.
So how have you found the transition then to media and broadcast and the culture of that compared to elite sport? How does it compare?
You know what, actually, someone's asked me that before, and it's the only adrenaline rush working in live TV that I would get with sport. So obviously before an international game, you do all your research, you know, your players, what are their skills and how do they run on short corners, and you put on a pitch and you have to deliver, because if you don't deliver, then you lose and you obviously don't get the result that you want. And it's the same with when I've been presenting or kind of doing interviews live in stadiums on TV, whatever it may be. If you don't do your preparation and deliver it properly, then you're going to get sacked, aren't you? So it's the adrenaline rush and the buzz you get after you've done it. It's one of the, I think, probably one of the few kind of things which would be similar to live sport. So I'm loving it. But it just goes to prove I am a little bit of a control freak when it comes to like doing all my research and making sure that everything's in place so I can perform properly.
a control freak, but it sounds like you're like scaring yourself as well, do you?
Yeah, I'm scared to fail. I'm scared to embarrass myself and I'm scared to embarrass other people. So sometimes, you know, if someone's taken a gamble on me, the production company, and said, I love sport, watch rugby internationally, but I'm not very kind of up to date in terms of the premiership teams, don't know the technicalities, but I'm willing to sit down, learn, and make sure I deliver it properly. So they obviously said, right, okay, we're going to go ahead with you. And then I get paranoid that if I don't deliver to how they expect, then I've let them down and let them down taking a gamble on me. So, yeah, I put a lot of pressure under myself, but it's worth it.
Yeah, I mean, that's just professionalism at the end of the day, isn't it?
Yeah, sure.
How do you find coming into broadcast as a female? It's still, with sports in particular, a very male-dominated environment. There are so many more female journalists now than even when I started out, but there is always the danger that we face extra scrutiny, really, and our knowledge and ability comes under extra scrutiny. How have you felt that?
I mean, to be honest, it is very male-dominated. First and foremost, I've always felt comfortable in male company because I've got twin brother, older brother, my mum's got five brothers and all my cousins are boys, believe it or not. So I've always grown up being a bit of a tomboy and always been in that company. So in terms of being around them, that's fine. But the pressure that comes with maybe whether you're broadcasting football, especially that is the top male dominated sport. Although I know my stuff, sometimes you feel you have to back it up even more so. To prove that you know your stuff almost. And dare I say it, I think there's still a little bit of an old school view, especially some of the older generation of ex-footballers or things like that, who can sometimes bat away your opinion, even though it is very valid and very true and you know, you're just as able to have your opinion as they are. So I think it's definitely changing. I think I've seen it change even the 2 years that I've been doing broadcasting, especially in football and things like that. But I think what's really refreshing is the amount of women, like you say, who are coming through, putting the names out there and really delivering. I think it's really, really good to see.
But you think that you've had to work harder to prove yourself, to show that you're not there just because of any reason other than that you're good enough, that you do the prep, that you do your research, that you understand the game?
Yeah, I think I'd do it anyway. I think more so for me is because I'm also conscious of the fact that I've come off the back of being a hockey player for the last 10 years. Whether you're male or female, there's other people in the industry who have been, you know, chipping away at their career for the last 10 years. So they've been in studios, started off maybe as a T-boy, T-girl, and they've got to a presenting role, and I waltz in as a hockey player. So it's more of a case that I want to show people that I'm just as capable, you know, whether I'm working for 2 years or 10 years. So that's where my mindset's at, whether I'm a male or a female. But yeah, I guess it's just me anyway. I just think you know your stuff, and you've just got to research it anyway and keep up to date with everything.
I was really intrigued, and we chatted about this very briefly before I pressed record, about a piece that you wrote for BBC Online during the summer, and it was about the role of women in sport in particular and how you felt that maybe the media representation was that you had to be either sporty or glamorous, that you weren't allowed to be both. Tell me about the incident that sort of sparked that in your head. It was quite a specific incident in the run-up to Rio that you, I think, maybe only read about afterwards. Is that right?
Yeah, so obviously when we were at the Olympics, we were cut off to the complete outside world, which is how we wanted it, to be honest, away from the media. And when I got home, my husband had kept every press clipping. And it started off with the first game. We'd literally just get like a one line, not even a line, like four words of England 4, Australia 2. And that was it. And then obviously, the further along in the tournament we got more coverage. Now, when we got into the final, all the papers decided to do like a profile on each of the players, name, background, occupation, and then a write-up of how we got to the final. And I was flicking through one, I think it was the Daily Mail, actually, classic. And I flipped over and it's got like everyone. It had like Alex Danson, vegetarian, obviously that's very important, has a degree in whatever. And then it said Helen Richardson Walsh, degree in psychology, married to Kate Richardson Walsh, captain, and then everyone's interests. Then it got to me and it said Sam Quirk, swimwear model. And I was like, what? Because I've never done any modelling. I think what happened before the Olympics, I did a shoot with a magazine and it was celebrating the female form in terms of being a strong. So I think they did, I can't remember who they did, but I think they did a sprinter maybe for like her arms. Mm-hmm. So she had this incredible, like, almost like a tailored suit on, but it was just a waistcoat. So you could see her arms and mm-hmm. the way she was sprinting. And for me, it was legs because of hockey players. So I had like, I was covered up apart from my legs. And I obviously got hold of this one picture and decided to take it upon themselves to call me a swimsuit model. And for me, I just thought, why aren't they focusing on, you know, Sam Quirk? She's missed out on two Olympic Games, but she's finally, you know, her dreams come true and got to a third Olympic Games. Photo shoots, things where you can look glam, then fine, it's a personal choice. But females who, you know, want to do them shots shouldn't automatically be sexualized. I remember going to, after the Olympics, when I was talking to different agents, because I didn't have an agent for about 3 weeks afterwards, but couldn't manage. I sat down with about four different ones in London, and one of them, chat, I can give you this, we can do that. And the last comment he said was, well, I'd love to hear back from you, but just to let you know, we've already got a lingerie company who would be very interested and we'd love to work with you that. And I just looked at him in my head and I just thought, you've got the complete wrong end of the stick. Like, you've just completely devalued everything you've just said to me, because that's what you think of me. That's what you think of me. And I'd sat there and told him what I want to do in my career. So again, that's just another little instance. But then at the same time, he might have thought that's what she wants. That's what she wants to achieve. But for me, it's never been about, you know, getting your kit off to get where you need to be. I think if you've got the talent and the drive to do it, then you can still achieve it that way.
Is there a difference between you getting your kit off, for want of a better phrase, and David Beckham or Cristiano Ronaldo doing that and selling themselves and their image through their physicality and their muscularity and in, you know, often a very sexual way?
There shouldn't be, but there definitely is. I even think, even away from sexuality, I think male athletes can be themselves and they're seen as characters and personalities. I think for female sports women especially, we are seen as role models, quite rightly, but dare we, you know, have an opinion or step out of that role model, perfect woman, perfect athlete mold, then, you know, you're scrutinized and you make headlines and things like that. The public need to see female athletes as themselves. Like, what are they like at home? What are they like with their best mates? Because I sometimes think it's really difficult, especially in a team. It's even more difficult because you're obviously living the ideals and values of the team, quite rightly, but dare you ever step out of that mold, you've also then got to answer to the team. And I'm saying it's not in a bad way, but I found it after the Olympics, because I would answer, you know, the question of how did it feel to stand on the podium in a different way that maybe one of my other teammates would, then I think that's where I broke away a little bit, because I would very much just wear my heart on my sleeve. I'd be saying, well, you know what, when I was stood on the podium, I was in bits. The whole time I was used to be travelling from Leeds down to London, crying in the car because I was tired or missing my best mates, you know, birthdays and my nan's birthday. It was completely worth it. Whereas the right thing, or what was perceived to be the right thing to say, was, well, you know, it's down to the hard work of the staff, the team, I couldn't have done it on myself, which I would say that as well. But at the same time, people want to know, how did you feel? And because I potentially brought that human element to it, I think that's why I got a little bit more kind of exposure or opportunity off the fact. And I think female sports stars need to be more open and be allowed to be themselves. And I think that's where then we would get more exposure, because the public can relate to that person and see that actually they're just a normal person with an extraordinary talent trying to achieve their dream, then you're more inclined to follow their journey. I mean, you see all the time of, you know, a footballer's been in the news for doing something amazing, but giving money to charity or helping someone who's been in the car crash. No doubt the people who read them headlines will tune in to watch the match on Saturday. And it's the same with women. I think if, for example, if someone gets injured and that athlete can talk openly and honestly about the injury, about how, you know, you feel so terrible and you're so down and you don't know how to pick yourself up, if they can talk about that in the public without obviously people going on the attack and trying to catch them up, then I think those people are more likely to go, actually, you know, Sam Quirk's not back from injury, what a story, she's for X, Y and Z, let's tune in to watch her next month when she's playing at the Women's World Cup or whatever. So I think that is, whether it's sexualizing women, but I just think women in general have it tougher, almost, to be themselves.
Is it? I was chatting to the sprinter Dina Asher-Smith about this, and she was saying about we were both saying about the difficulty of women having to fit into a certain box. Is it that women in general, be they sports stars, be they television stars, be they whatever kind of public figures from the world of business, is it that we're not allowed to be more complete, that we have to, that it becomes confusing, that we're supposed to represent something to the masses, and I say that in a general sense, but really I mean to men, and it becomes confusing then if you're a bit of everything.
Yeah, but I think sometimes the confusion comes where people are either good or you're bad, if that makes sense. So you're either the perfect role model and you don't step out of line, you say all the right things, or you're caught out in boozing, going out with your mates, or doing this, or wearing bikinis, or whatever it may be. And it's not. It's just being able to, what I believe, have a strong opinion. And I think if you have an opinion strong enough that you can back it up, then let them people have that opinion. I think, like you say, being boxed in, whether it's, especially as an athlete, going back to being sexualized, and you know, people just want to see you all the time in your kit, being sporty, hair up, hair back. And I, especially Dina as well, I remember seeing her on one of the chat series recently, and she had the most incredible, I think it was a green dress on.
On Jonathan Ross.
Yeah, she had the most incredible green dress on, and I just thought, that's amazing. And she came across, and it was so refreshing to see her being herself. And it was just like a warm aura, and I know I've spoken to other people about it, and they said, actually, you could see what she's like as in a real person, not a real person, that sounds terrible, but especially as athletes, you get kind of put on a pedestal where you... put on a pedestal where you are this incredible athlete and you're emotionless and, you know, you're so driven that nothing else matters. But to see her there just chatting about her successes and her life, I thought it was incredible. And I think she's got the right balance at the moment. I know she's going places. I think obviously Tokyo will be huge for her, her recent success. And I think she can definitely help mould and hopefully change the direction of what a female athlete is supposed to be, whatever that is. Just by being herself and being honest to herself.
I'm just thinking, I mean, is it, we say that it is harder for women, and in so many tangible ways it is, but are there not parallels with men as well? Because if we look at the two examples that I mentioned, Beckham and Ronaldo, for example, they have much more success and a much more international, global brand, if you like, than the likes of Wayne Rooney, for example. And Beckham and Ronaldo are incredibly polished, but they're very, very good looking. Wayne Rooney doesn't have the looks, but he's got incredible talent.
Yeah.
And it's easier to paint him as flawed in the media and to pick out all of his flaws. And Ronaldo and Beckham, certainly we know, have not been perfect. But it's easier to almost demonise Rooney and make a laughing stock out of him, is it not? Because he doesn't have the same looks as they do.
Yeah, definitely. It does exist. But I don't think it's difficult because as a male footballer, especially football, it's a whole different world. And as you say, Ronaldo and Beckham definitely haven't been angels in their past history. And I think even Wayne Rooney hasn't been an angel. I think if females potentially had behaved and done the things that they've done, 100% their career would be over. I mean, that's my opinion. But I think, I don't know, what does it exist? Is it personality? I know David Beckham's built his brand off being, especially with Posh and Becks. But Ronaldo, again, the complete athlete. How many times have you won the Ballon d'Or? How many times has Rooney won the Ballon d'Or? How many times has Rooney won the Champions League? How many times has Ronaldo won the Champions League? Things like that. So I suppose you could say it, but then also I look at Ronaldo and think, oh, not now, but I love a bit of Messi. But he's definitely been the world's best player, and you can see what goes in behind that. But it's difficult to say. I guess it does. But then who is it who says, actually, this is what we want as a brand, this is what we don't want as a brand? I don't know, it's difficult. I mean, you look at golf, Tiger Woods is the same. But yet he comes back, and he's a hero at the Ryder Cup, and when he's been playing in recent golf tournaments after what he's been through. But yeah, it's difficult. I think that's the difference as well between male and females. You rarely see a female sports star in the limelight behave in the way some other male sports stars behave. I don't know.
One thing Dina had mentioned to me was that she thought that part of the problem is because we still have predominantly men writing the stories, and it's a male perspective on all the stories, and they're the ones who are creating and shaping this narrative. I mean, I'm thinking of an article that was written in The Sun. I think it was shortly after you had said about women not needing to be sexualized, and they were printing pictures from your Littlewoods I think it was your Littlewoods collection, or you're promoting a Littlewoods collection of gym gear. And the suggestion in the article was that you were being hypocritical,
yes,
because you'd said you wanted to be judged on your hockey skills and not your image. And there you were, I think they described you as hot and bothered, showing off they were claiming your body when obviously you were selling clothes. But is part of the problem that we just need to reshape that narrative and see that it's much more nuanced than that?
Again, it's because I suppose that's their opinion. I mean, I made sure that when I was working with Littlewoods, I chose to work with them because obviously they're originated from here with John Moores and things like that. So to have the opportunity to work with them was huge. And again, it was really important for me not to then... I wanted to be in gym gear, which was realistic. So your leggings, tracksuit, proper running trainers, things like that. But I suppose it's difficult. It's sometimes you can't win. Everyone's going to have an opinion. I mean, you see it now on social media. It's rife. You can't ever say anything right. Even if you say it's a perfectly normal thing, someone will always unpick it. But I guess writing those type of headlines, why have that negativity? And I think it's completely right. If you've got idiotic newspapers making a negative out of something which could potentially be positive, someone who could be a role model, appeal to young girls who may see sport as, oh, it's only for people who get hot and sweaty and for it's ugly and I want to look good. They're completely cutting them off altogether. So, I mean, even when I go into schools now, quite often the teachers or PE teachers have already put a slide up, and quite often they'll use a Littlewoods picture, a picture of me in the jungle and a picture of me on the pitch. And one of the first things I always say, especially when the airbrush ones come up, I always say, doesn't that person on that screen look completely different? Because that's unachievable, A, because it's professional help, and on top of that, it's airbrushed. And I always say that to them, because I think the pressure those youngsters are under now to be able to be this perfect model, this perfect body shape, I think it's a really pressurized environment for them to be. And I think the more women especially who can step out and say, that is airbrushed, because I'm all about celebrating the female body, but more often than not, the reality of the situation is it's not real because it's airbrushed. My lumps and bumps have all been airbrushed. My wrinkles, laughter lines have all been airbrushed. And I think that's why it's so important as well that I think athletes especially, because you see us in our rawest form, you see us when we're under the pressure, when we're out on there sweating. And as I say, the female body in all its glory, being strong, fast, flexible, whatever it may be, to then also seeing us the perfect airbrush model. So yeah, I think it's really important as an athlete especially to be able to tick all those boxes. I just see when you're on the pitch, track, swimming pool, that is you in the bare bones of the moment. I think it's just really important really to make sure that youngsters, especially girls, but even boys now, have that person to say, actually, it's achievable to be both of them. If I want to be that, I can be that. And if, at the same time, if I want to look glam on Saturday, I can look glam on Saturday.
So would you ever ask them not to airbrush your pictures and to make that more real?
I wouldn't have a problem with it. I remember going into the jungle, actually. A few people have said to me, were you going to get fake eyelashes on? And, you know, I was really worried about my chest size because I've got hardly any boobs, and I thought, okay, I'm gonna get like chicken fillets put into my bikini so it gives me a bit of push up or whatever, because I was so worried, because I just thought, hang on a minute, I'm gonna go and get filmed 24/7. Someone said go and get like a spray tan ready to go so you look good, and all these things were going through my head. And I remember thinking, I went to Pride of Britain and there was a young girl called Nikki, and she won an award for doing her YouTube videos of makeup tutorials, and she had a facial disfigurement. And I just sat there and I thought, she is such an inspiration. I thought, why am I worrying about these little pathetic things? And A, it was because it was fear of judgment and what does the perfect woman look like? Because you see pictures of, like, you know, whether they've had cosmetic surgery or not, that's up to them, how they feel confident in themselves. And then I just thought, you know what, this young girl's really inspired me. So I just thought, sod it, forget the fillets, forget the eyelash extensions, forget the tan, I'm just going to go in as me, because the best person you can be is me. And yes, at first, you know, you're trying to cover yourself and you think that the cameras can't see you, but then you realise they've got every single angle on you. And it was quite an epiphany for me, because I just thought, the best person you can be is yourself. But I also wanted to go in there and be like, well, actually, this is my body. And I'm sure there's thousands of people with similar type of body shape and boob sizes as me, because this is what it is. And I just thought it's an opportunity to kind of see me for me and celebrate, like you say, no airbrush and no fake things. And it was just, yeah, me and all my glory, because that's the best person I could be. Because I thought, coming out of the jungle, if I've got like fake eyelashes or tans all the time, then I'm always going to have to do that. And that's not what I'm about. And as I say, like my nieces, my little cousins as well, I just see the pressure they're under, and to be able to, I just want to shake them and say that's not reality. Instagram especially, with all these filters and things, I'm putting women, not even sports women, just general women, under so much pressure to look perfect and look good. And most often not, it's not achievable. But yeah, if I did a photo shoot which wasn't airbrushed or anything, I'd be like, yeah, fine.
Are women and girls under more pressure now than ever before? You mentioned Instagram, and we look at, you know, the rise of reality TV stars, and I say that almost as if it's anything new. It's not. I mean, reality TV stars have been around for a generation now, really. But the level of primping and preening that goes into women and men, I guess, really, if you look at Love Island, you know, and everybody comes out and gets the same work done and looks the same. How do you counter that pressure for young girls and boys, as you say?
Show people in their rawest form. And the best way is that is through sport. Again, I haven't got an issue with people who want to get work done to the face, body, whatever, because if that makes them feel better, then fine. But expose the people who aren't getting that work done. I remember there was a task actually on Love Island, and all the lads had to say which one was the best looking woman. And there was uproar on social media, because the one they chose was obviously Megan, who'd had the most work out of everyone done. And I remember it trending. I love watching Love Island. It's
guilty as well.
Guilty. But like you say, is it creating this culture now where people, and youngsters especially, are thinking, you know, that's what I need to look like. It's not even want to. I need to look like that for boys to fancy me. But at the same time, if there's nothing else on TV other than, you know, your Love Island, the Kardashians, and this type of role model that there is, that young girls and boys think they need to be, then I think it's not going to help things. That's why you need to get, well, especially women's sport. I think men, football, boys have footballers to look up to. I think every young lad, even me, even though I was not a young lad, wanted to grow up being a footballer. Your Lewis Hamilton. All these different sports stars, rugby, tennis, golfers. Boys have so many more sports role models to look up to because of the exposure. They're winning championships, and you know, you see a Lewis Hamilton or someone lifting a World Cup, your Mbappes and things, and the young lads will go to sleep saying, I want to do that. But then for youngsters, especially women in sport, you might see that the majority of the time at the Olympics. And that shouldn't be the case. One month every 4 years should not be the case. I know it's getting better with football. Obviously, we've got more football exposure, Hockey World Cups on all the BT Sport and stuff now. But I just think if you're seeing that 3-4 times a year, not every week, whether it's in the papers, online content, you're not giving these children another option of who they want to look or aspire to be.
And do you think that's key in terms of young girls? You know, lots of young girls go into sport and then they get to their mid-teens, maybe drop out because they think they have to make that choice between being sporty and being concerned about their appearance. So do you think that this whole issue goes down to the grassroots as well before you even get to the stage of sexualization of people's bodies, but just breaking down that debate a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. I think that age, especially, I think it's around 13, 14, there's a massive drop-off with young girls playing sport. But at the same time, what confuses me is there's been a massive increase in young girls joining gyms, looking great in the gym gear, but then working out in the gym. But then when it comes to team sport and sport, there's been a massive drop-off. And then that's where I'm like, well, why is that?
Why do you think it is?
I think it is pressure to look good and what's cool and what's not cool. Probably ages ago now, I put a poll out on my Twitter. I'll have to look it up, actually. And I put the question out there, and the amount of replies I had, and it was more so from coaches and parents. And it was the pressure because their friends are all out getting boyfriends on a Saturday night or a Friday night, and you know, all their friends going out shopping, and they want to be cool, and they don't want to be go against the grain almost because of fear of judgment. But I remember growing up, I still managed to do all that. I think, you know, even though I went out on the Friday with my mates, I still played hockey on a Saturday. And it was about being sensible. And I remember, I don't even think I wore my first dress until I was like 14 or something. So I was a real tomboy. But as I say, the pressure is now to
not go against the grain, but to be cool is huge. And that's why for me, when I came out of I'm a Celeb and the post interview, I just said, I want sport to be cool, because it's cool for people to go on Love Island, do I'm a Celeb and whatever, do Strictly. So yes, there's a sports person. There's not one sports person on this year's I'm a Celeb, by the way. Have you noticed?
I haven't.
The closest it's got is Harry Redknapp, but obviously he's a manager. So that's upset me a little bit, because I just think you need that extra something, whether they're an ex sports person. I know everyone's probably in training for upcoming competitions, but I just think you need that extra string to a bow to appeal to youngsters, the crossover between sport and showbiz to make it cool.
Which female sports stars do you think then get it right? Get that balance of being a role model, showing off their sporting prowess, but also not denying a desire to look good, for example. Who gets that right in your mind?
Well, recently, Dina. I think with her success as well. I think, as I said before, first and foremost, you've got to have the success to be able to then go out there and be a role model and say to people you can do both. Toni Duggan, for me, she's obviously from Liverpool, but she's always, from day one, always had a mascara on, got her hair done, but she's one of the country's best footballers. And I know she's in Barcelona at the moment, but she's always there with Nike, looking good, but also appealing to the youngsters who are coming through playing football.
For someone to fit into this category of role model, do they need to want to look good? Does that matter?
I don't think so. I think it's, for me, it's appealing to them. But and that is coming out and being yourself and have an opinion. If you don't believe in something, then say it. So I think female athletes, if they don't believe in something or they feel passionately about something, whether it's charitable work, themselves, competition, I'm not saying, you know, be completely left field, but don't be afraid to be yourself. And if you have a strong opinion, then come out and say it. And I think if young girls have got more role models like that to be a strong, confident woman and comfortable in their own skin and comfortable in her own opinion, that can only be a good thing.
Where does that strength come from in you, that confidence to be able to say, here's what I think, and I don't really care if anybody challenges me on it because I believe in it and I've got evidence to back it up? Have you always been like that?
I don't think so. I was really shy growing up, really shy. I think being part of a team, whether it's GB, boys football team, you always had to have a voice. And I know in my book that I've got out, I'm very, very honest in it. And some of the experience which I talk about in that book has led to me being confident now. Because I remember when I first went into Team GB, you'd have older athletes blaming you for a terrible pass they made. And back then, I used to just accept it and be like, oh. But then inside, my blood would be boiling because I said that. I would be like, how was I supposed to get that pass? And you're telling me off for not receiving it. So I think you just learn with experience. And then obviously, I remember being part of the Team GB squad. And when you've got the likes of Helen Richardson Walsh, you know, I remember Alex Danton, best story, who used to be the goalkeeper, Kate Richardson Walsh. When you've got role models, and they were my role models growing up. I came into the team at 18. Kate was the captain, Helen vice-captain. And seeing how eloquent they are in backing up their opinion, whether it is, you know, something for the team, something for the coaches, how they phrase and how they kind of represent themselves in the squad. That's why how I based being strong almost. And again, it wasn't because they were saying anything negative, it was because they would have an opinion and they'd have the confidence to put it across to the team. So I think definitely being in sport 100% helped, because you come across all sorts, whether it's, you know, parents on the sideline laughing and sniggering every time you hit the ball out, being able to deal with that. I remember that really upset me, but now if anyone did it to me, I'd turn around and be like, who's the one with the gold medal, do you know what I mean? So it's definitely experience, sport definitely. But yeah, just experience. I've definitely changed massively in growing up. I think the more knockbacks and setbacks I've had have given me the confidence to come back stronger. And I think you only have two choices, don't you, for a setback. You either tumble and just keep falling, or you get up, get stronger and have another crack at it.
There's a lot of top athletes and top achieving athletes that I speak to seem to say the same thing in that respect. And it's something that I've taken away from a lot of the interviews that I've done, is that it's not so much about the winning, it's about the feeling and how you react to that and how you deal with that. And that's what makes you a stronger character, which ultimately then can lead to success on the pitch or, you know, in whatever environment it might be. But it's more about the knockbacks than anything else. Is that, do you think that's the case?
100%. You learn more by not achieving sometimes. You know, it took me, almost 10 years. So about 2008, missed out on two Olympics. And I changed massively as a person. I was so uptight and I was not very outspoken. And I remember with Danny Carey, I was convinced the head coach just didn't want to pick me, didn't want to pick me. So, you know, whether it was my hotel room was down the other end of the corridor, he couldn't win either way because I'd be thinking he doesn't want to be by me. But then if my room was next door to his, it'd be he wants to keep an eye on me. So it's been a complete mindset. And it wasn't until I had some very frank conversations with him and said, listen, Danny, and then he could be honest with me. And then that changed that relationship round. And that's where my success just got greater and greater. So, yeah, definitely setbacks because you have to react to it. I think if you want something bad enough, you've got to find a way to adjust to get what you want. Because ultimately, you've got to work with people.
So what of those lessons, then, are you going to take into your next career? Because I mean, it's quite daunting, really, to think that you've worked in one field, literally, your whole adult life, and now you're going to start in a brand new career. For most of us, we don't do that. We start in something maybe in our mid-20s or earlier or slightly later, but we keep going pretty much in the same path. What kind of lessons from your sporting experience are you going to take then going forward into this other big, bad world?
100% communication. Definitely, even in personal life. I crave feedback, and I think it's being an athlete. You always want to know what you can do better, because you want to be the best. Because ultimately, you have to fight for your place in a squad. And then if you have that place in your squad, then you want to win medals. So for me, it was a communication. And obviously, that lesson I learned with Danny Carey after the Commonwealth Games. You know, he came back in after going away for a while, not being the coach. And the story was basically in the Commonwealth Games final, there were 7 minutes to go, and I could just hear his voice, Karen, who was doing the subs on the bench, and he was in the stand. I came off the pitch and I literally sat there and I thought, well, 1-0 up, there we go again, he doesn't trust me. And it great. We ended up drawing 1-1 and then lost on penalties, and it was grating on me. And I just thought, I need to go and see him and speak to him and say, listen, now you're back. I don't want to waste your time. I don't want to waste the place if you're not going to pick me. I don't want to waste my time because I've already done 5 years and you've not picked me. And I said, why don't you trust me to leave me on for 7 minutes in a Commonwealth Games final? I just feel like you don't want to pick me. And he sat there in silence, shook his head. And when I stopped speaking, he went, Sam, he said, you've got the complete wrong end of the stick. He said, I was radioing down to Karen to get Zoe off the pitch to put you at left back because I rate you as one of, if not the best tackler on the squad, one of the best defenders on the team.
So you came off in a Commonwealth Games final when you shouldn't have done?
Yeah, because the communication got lost between him and the assistant coach. And he said, that should never have happened. I was saying for you to move over to the left and move Unzi to the back and take Zoe off. But Karen had thought that he was saying, get Sam off. And it was literally like an epiphany because all these things that had gone in my head where I hadn't even just had the conversation with him, I was just presuming all these most negative things and then my head would just run away with all these thoughts. So that was one of the biggest things I took away, especially being in a squad, whether it's your teammates, your coaches, your husband, if you don't speak to people and ask them what they're thinking, then your head just runs away with all these different ideas. So like now, even after, you know, if I work with a certain production company or TV, I always say, right, I usually send an email and just say, what do you think? Or even after the first hit or whatever, I'll say, okay, what can I do better? And I always make people understand brutality, being honest with me.
Is good.
Is good. Yeah. So that's definitely, so me, honest feedback and just communicating, definitely.
So what's the aim? You worked 10 years to get that Olympic gold medal. You succeeded in the end. You're a fireball of energy and determination, and you're the kind of person I really think will just keep going until you get what it is that you want. What's the next big aim, the next big goal?
To be honest, I used to be cringe, but not very confident saying this, whereas now I'm really confident, and it's something I've set my eye on. Now, instead of obviously going to win an Olympic gold medal, I'd love to present in the Olympics. You know, whether it's the next one, the one after that, I see my career very long term. It's not just kind of milking the cow while I can, because ultimately I want to be, if I am in that hot seat, I want to be the best Sam Quirk that's going to be in the hot seat. I don't want to be rushed into it when I'm not ready. And that's why for me, communication is so key, that if the people believe that I can do it and I believe that I can do it and we all work together, then yeah, that would be the ultimate goal, I think.
Broadcasting legend.
Yeah, maybe we'll see with the legend bit. But yeah, hopefully one day. But yeah, it's more long term. I mean, as I say, I just got married. Hopefully want to start a family soon and yeah, get all the grown up stuff is ready to happen now.
Plenty to squish in.
Yeah.
Sam, best of luck with it all. Thank you
so much.
Thanks so much.
It is interesting to hear that for all her confidence and unapologetic attitude, Sam Queck credits sport with giving her that self-belief. We can't forget sometimes just how much sport has to teach our kids, specifically young girls, beyond simply how to look after their bodies and get physically strong. It's why, arguably, we do them a disservice by reducing physical activity to questions of whether you're the kind of young woman who wants to get sweaty or not. It's also, I think, why we need our female role models to be allowed to be as whole, as rounded as possible. Sam mentioned Dina Asher-Smith, who I spoke to for an earlier episode of the podcast in this season. If you missed that or any of the other chats over the two seasons, then please do check out the back catalogue. You can catch all manner of conversations and discussions from across the sporting world, and they're available to download right now. If you'd like to subscribe, please do, and you can leave me a review on iTunes as well. If you have any thoughts on anything you've heard, then please do follow me and drop me a line on Instagram and on Twitter at When Orla Met.